on the one hand, this year is a continuation of the previous year before Rosh Hashanah. On the other hand, don't worry about it. If you missed the first year, so we're going to make believe this is a year in and of itself. So I'll sum up in about 30 seconds everything we spoke about on the first year. We spoke about one fundamental yisod in terms of what Rosh Hashanah is all about. Rosh Hashanah is a time of being lefnei Hashem. It's a time that we're in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We elaborate upon the fact that Tkiyah Shofar is a Kiyam and Tefillah primarily, and the very definition of Tefillah is Amud Lefnei HaMelech. Atem Nitzav Hayom Kuchem Lefnei Hashem Lekechem is a Kriyas Torah before Rosh Hashanah. The bottom line is, Rosh Hashanah amounts to a person being in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's not surprising that the follow-up to the Rosh Hashanah Shir, in terms of being lefnei Hashem, are the three words that we recite throughout the davening Yom Kippur. And it's hard for me to keep a tally of how many times we say it. Maybe the real good about tefillahs will give you a cheshbon at the end. But the phrase, Lifnei Hashem Titaru, I think we say it once or twice during the course of the davening. Lifnei Hashem Titaru. Those three words, in a certain sense, really sum up everything that Yom Kippur stands for. If Rosh Hashanah is Eimed Lifnei Hashem, then Yom Kippur is Lifnei Hashem Titaru. So we have to take really a step back and try to understand what exactly is this phrase all about. So the Lifnei Hashem part, I think we have a pretty good understanding based on last year. But the one word that's going to be the focus of tonight's year is the word Titaru. What exactly does that mean? Very vague, esoteric term, to be Metayer, to purify. What in the world does that mean? So we find even from a halachic point of view, just from a pure, in terms of halacha, what exactly is the Torah asking us to do? Lifnei Hashem Titaru. Assuming that this is a tzivui, assuming that this is a mitzvah, what do the words mean? How do we mitar ourselves in Yom Kippur? So we find the machlokes, it's not to call it a machlokes, it's, you know, on the one hand, one may be a position of the Rishonim, may be a position of the Acharonim, but we'll call it machlokes for our purposes. On the one hand, we find that the word titaru may be referring to literal tahara in the sense of tefillah b'mikvah. There is an age-old practice that many, many communities are going to the mikvah at Erev Yom Kippur, and already the days of the Gaonim speak about this minhag, and nobody's really sure where this comes from. The idea of going to the mikvah in Erev Yom Kippur, there are a lot of suggestions that are made. The Rosh suggests it's part of the regular din of going to the mikvah for every Yom Tif, and some say it's based on Takanas Ezra, Baal Keri, a lot of different reasons that are given. So the Yerucha Shulchan says he thinks that the simplest, most straightforward reason for going to the mikvah in Erev Yom Kippur is based on three words in the Chumash, Lifnei Hashem Titaru. There's a mitzvah to become Tohar for Yom Kippur. So in that sense of the word, that's the source of this custom, then the word Titaru is being taken in a very, very literal sense, in the sense of Tumah V'Tahara, i.e. Hilchas Tumah and Hilchas Tefillah B'Mikvah. There are Rishonim, Rabbi Yonah, who suggests that Lifnei Hashem Titaru has a very, very different meaning, that Lifnei Hashem Titaru is a mitzvah, is a chiyuv on Yom Kippur, but Titaru doesn't mean a halachic Tumah V'Tahara in the sense of Tefillah B'Mikvah. Rather, Titaru means a mitzvah tshuva. There's a unique mitzvah of tshuva/vidui on Yom Kippur. You know, if you look in the Rambam, in the beginning of the tshuva, so the Rambam tells us that any time a person violates an avera, so they become obligated in the mitzvah of tshuva. It's like any other mitzvah of the Torah. There's a mitzvah you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, there's a mitzvah to eat matzah on Pesach, there's a mitzvah to put on tefillin every day, mitzvah to say kriyashma every day and every night. So there's a mitzvah to do tshuva. When is the mitzvah to do tshuva? Whenever you do an avera. So doing an avera is a mechayev of the mitzvah of tshuva. It's a kind of a mitzvah that we prefer not to have to do. It's like one of the Tayag mitzvahs is veheishiv is like zelah shagazel. So we don't find that, you know, the Rambam tells us in Uchas Tshuva that on between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur we're supposed to run after mitzvahs. We're supposed to try to do whatever mitzvahs we can possibly do. So we don't find that we should go run after veheishiv. I mean, if we did gazela before, then we better believe we do veheishiv like zelah this time of year. But there's no great mitzvah that's steal in order to fulfill the mitzvah of veheishiv like zelah. I've said on several occasions that there are different kinds of mitzvahs in the Torah. There are some mitzvahs that we're supposed to do, and there are other mitzvahs that we're not supposed to do, and there are other mitzvahs that are neutral. The Rambam counts one of the mitzvahs in the Torah is mekach u'memkir, buying and selling. So we wouldn't find that a person should have a chumrah during the Seder Mitzvah to go to Pathmark every morning, night, to be machmir to buy a bag of potatoes, to fulfill the mitzvah of the rice in mekach u'memkir. That's not the kind of mitzvah Kadosh Baruch Hu is really interested in us doing. The din is, if you want to buy potatoes, so then there is dinim how you buy potatoes, but it's not a kind of a mitzvah you're supposed to run after. So the mitzvah of tshuva is also not a mitzvah we should run after. It would be much better if we wouldn't have done the avera in the first place. But if we did the avera, then we're mechuyav in the mitzvah of tshuva. So the mitzvah of tshuva is all year long, not unique to Yom Kippur. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes that no, there's a special chiyuv to be chayzi b'tshuva on Yom Kippur. Where does it say that in the Chumash? V'chayzi b'tshuva Yom Kippur, lifnei Hashem titaru. That's exactly what the mitzvah is. You're supposed to be mitar yourself from averus. Not like the Derech HaShulchan says, to tovel yourself in a mikvah shomayim, but rather to be mitar yourself from averus. That's what lifnei Hashem titaru means. So we have two very, very different understandings of what lifnei Hashem is. Lifnei Hashem, the halachic mechanism of tevila b'mikvah, Terech HaShulchan's understanding was Lifnei Hashem the Torah, the halachi mechanism of Chazar B'tshuva, like Rabbeinu Yehuda is saying. But I'd like to suggest, perhaps we could suggest a third possibility as to what Lifnei Hashem the Torah is all about, and in a certain sense it really combines a little bit of both, a little bit of the notion of Tara B'mikvah, as well as the notion of Tshuva, into one kind of a package, what we're really supposed to be focusing on. And Lefinia's Naiti appears that this is really, in a certain sense, the main theme that really permeates the entire day of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a lot of things flying around and diving in Yom Kippur. But if you had to really, really, really break it down to its elements as to what the real focus of Yom Kippur is all about, so I think perhaps the yisod that we're going to try to suggest, it all revolves around these words, Lifnei Hashem Titaru. In order to understand what the word titaru means, so we have to go back to the model of Tuma V'Tahara. Because after all, the word Tara, titaru, is not the first place that it appears in Sefer Vayikra. So what does titaru mean? What does Tara mean in other contexts? So we know there are very, very intricate, elaborate halachas of Tuma and Tahara. Torah tells us, person comes into contact with a dead body, they become Tomei. Person comes into contact with certain kinds of dead animals, become Tomei. A woman becomes Tomei or Tumas Nida. There's a concept of Tumas Keri, Tumas Av, Tumas Mitzvah. There are a lot of Tumas in the Torah. And there are principles of Tahara. There's Tevila, primarily Tevila B'mikvah, B'mayon. The question is there any message behind this entire intricate series of halachas of Tuma V'Tahara? Now, when I say a message behind these halachas, what I mean is as follows. Taking the words of the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, vis-a-vis Tekiah Shofar, the Rambam tells us that the bottom line is, do we really understand why we're blowing Shofar in Rosh Hashanah? What's the real reason we're blowing Shofar? The real reason, says the Rambam, is Gezeres HaMelech. It's a Gezeres HaKosov. Kach, Tziva Kadosh Baruch Hu, you have to blow Shofar in Rosh Hashanah. Elohat. The Rambam says, Afal pi she'gzeres ha-melechi, remez yeshbo. To say that it's just a gzeres ha-kosov and there's nothing we should walk away from, there's no religious lesson, there's no hashkafas ha-chayim we should derive from the Tekiah Shofar, says the Rambam is wrong. That we have to believe Yamuna Shleima that it's a choik, it's a gzeres ha-melech. On the other hand, even within the choik and the gzeres ha-melech, you've remez yeshbo. We're supposed to look for messages, we're supposed to look for hints, for allusions that we, in our limited understanding, can take away from a mitzvah. So it's not a stira. Just because a mitzvah is a choik, is a gzeres ha-kosov, doesn't detract from the fact that we are supposed to try to understand to the best of our ability what the Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying to send, what message is in a certain sense behind this choik. So following in the footsteps of the Rambam about the Tekiah Shofar, I think it's fair enough to apply this in the realm of Tuma V'Tahara as well, as the Rambam himself does to a certain extent at the very end of Hilchos Mikvos. Tuma V'Tahara is clearly an area of halacha that's chok. Clearly we're never going to be able to truly understand in this world, our limited capacity, the nuances and the details, the intricate details of every prat of Tuma V'Tahara. But there is clearly a theme that's presenting itself throughout the halachas of Tuma V'Tahara, and that is the notion of life and death. Tuma, just look at the words. Look at the instances when a person becomes tummy. The highest level of tuma is the highest level of death. The death of a human being, avia velsa tuma, that brings about the highest degree of tuma. When you go down a little bit on the back to the animal kingdom, so certain animals bring about also tuma, but to a lesser degree. But nothing is metame when it's alive. It's a dead animal that brings about tuma. It's the dead sheretz that brings about tuma. Everything which has to do with tuma revolves around something to do with an end of life. And even within those tumas, which we don't associate with something in the sense of literally dying, it's a tuma that's associated with a loss of a potential of life. Let's look at the models that the Torah sets up for us. The tumas that relate primarily to a man and to a woman. The tumas nida is, of course, connected biologically to the... It was a loss of a potential. A month passed by. There was potential for life that particular month. It didn't reach that potential. And therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu goes there that this tuma, it's an end of a life. Not an end literally of a life, an end of a potential life, a starting over of a life cycle, it comes with it, tuma. And even tumas keri, tuma shech vezera for a man also, shech vezera has the ability to bring life into the world, it didn't bring life into the world, and therefore it also creates the model of tuma. So if you look throughout the halachas of tuma, clearly there is this notion that tuma is synonymous with death, or at least something which relates very much to death. And, on the flip side, the notion of Tara very much is related to life. We find it very, very clear, at least in one model of Tahara, the model of Mayim Chayim. We know that the Torah sets up for us two different models of Tevila. There's the Tevila of a mikvah, And there's a tefillah of a mayon, of a spring, of a bubbling spring, a spring that's flowing with fresh water, of mayim chayim, live water. So mayim chayim is for surely, can be more chayim than mayim chayim. But even a mikvah, even a collection of rainwater, just the very notion of mayim, mayim is always synonymous with chios, with life. We find this in so many different ways, even in the secular world, that mayim is always the sign of life. Look, the Hadal of Avdalas, but when they spend billions of dollars running around space trying to find life. So for the last 50 years, they've been saying, how much money they've been spending trying to find life. So what are they looking for? Bottom line, they really think they're going to find on Mars. All of a sudden, they've been setting up spaceships, they've set up telescopes for years and years. They think all of a sudden they're going to find a bunch of little green Martians running around? Probably not. What are they looking for? They're looking for water. That's the bottom line. And they'll tell you they found water, they found a source of water. There was once water, there was this water, there was that. Because in the mind of science, which is the evidence, is that the way we perceive life today, so the only way we can think of life, of chayim, is with mayim. That's why it even rhymes with one another. That chios and mayim go hand in hand. So when they're looking for aqueducts in space, they're looking for canals, what they're looking for is mayim, because the corollary of mayim is, if there's water, then there's a chance of life. If there's no water, then there's no chance of life. Even if you look at it, even from a biological point of view, we know that the husband who gets that frantic call from his wife in the ninth month, the water broke. That's the lashon, the water broke. What does it mean? It means life's about to happen. It means the baby was inside the water is ice water, that means we're entering into a new phase of life. So mayim is always synonymous with the notion of life. So it's not so far for us to suggest this idea, that basically what tevila, the mikvah, tevila, the mayim chayim for sure, what it really means is that a person who had this, in a sense, an experience with death, either literally, person came into contact with the mace of an Adam, then requires an even higher level, and requires, in fact, mayim chayim el keli, there's a much higher degree of connection to death, and the degree of connection to life must take an even greater approach. But even the lower level tumas, the only way to get out of the world of tuma, out of the world of death, is to reconnect to mayim, which is ultimately the source of life. So from the vantage point of a Remez Yeshbo, what message we can walk away from the notion of going mitum militara is clearly this idea of going from the world of death to the world of life. This notion of standing in front of death on the one hand and life on the other hand, you cannot get more central to Yom Kippur than that. You cannot get more central to the entire Seder Simchah than that. As Chazal depict in the most beautiful poetic terms, Sifrei Chaim v'Sifrei Meisim Psuchim Lefanav. It means, how else could you possibly describe the days of Seder Simchah, of course, with the culmination of Yom Kippur, if not the fact that a person is looking at Misa, and he's looking at Chaim, and he has both paths in front of him, in a sense. Part of that same parsha that's always read right before it's the lead in to the Aseret Metshuva. It's the Vacharta B'Chayim. It's the difference, the two paths that face us, the path of Chayim and the path of Misa. This notion that these two possibilities that stand in front of a person of Chayim and Maves. So this is something which is central to the entire theme of the Avodas Yom Kippurim. We know that the Avodas Yom Kippurim, the Kabbanis that are brought in Yom Kippur, and the Bizman Shabbos HaMikdash HaKayim, that was the thrust of the entire day. That was it. That was everything. The Avodas Yom Kippurim. Now, Nebuch, we don't have Beis HaMikdash on the Shama Parm Svaseinu. So the best thing that we can do is we can recreate the Avodah, we can recreate the service in the Beis HaMikdash and go through the details and nuances of the Par and the Sar and the Kachay Oimer and the Achas V'Achas. We try to do our best with Mashal Parm Sfaseinu, but clearly everything is revolving around the Avodas Hayom. You know, sometimes it's hard for people because the Avodas Hayom, the Musaf time is ready. Remember, 2 o'clock, they lost all the kishkas around about afternoon Nisan HaTeik. If people are getting tired, they start to look to the break. But if you had to think of the hierarchy of the Tefillah, between you and me, off the record, the hierarchy, put it on the record, the hierarchy between Kol Nidre versus the Avodas Hayom, it's not even a contest. I mean, Kol Nidre is nice, but Kol Nidre is not Mikra Din, it's a Minik HaGoinim, and we're not even sure what it is, Machlek is a Rishayim. But in terms of the Avodas Hayom of Musaf, that's it, that's all there is, that's the essence of the entire Avodah. There's so much revolving around the Avodas Hayom, but there's clearly one message that's permeating the essence of Avodas Hayom. And that's also, once again, the notion of Misa and Chayim. When you take a look at the two main players, so to speak, of the Avodas Hayom of Yom Kippurim, so you have the two Seirim, the two goats, the the two goats that start off the same, they're bought with the same amount of money, and they look the same, and they're the same height, everything the same, and each one is about to travel on a different path. One is going to be the sawyer that, I mean, they're both going to physically die, that is true, but there's a very, very different path that the two goats are going to take. And in a certain sense, the Torah is telling us that the sawyer la'azazel, which is ultimately going to be the sawyer la'misa, of course, which is going to meet that tragic death, so to speak, of being thrown off the cliff, la'azazel, which is a total waste and a total destruction, and there's nothing left of it, and it's totally demolished. So it's interesting that the Torah tells us before that sawyer goes la'azazel, it's referred to as the sawyer ha'chai. Because it's like, in a certain sense, even like a sarcastic statement, so to speak, like saying, this is the sawyer ha'chai, take a good look at it. This is what you think chiyus is. You think there's life. This is the party. This is life. Look what's around the bend. Look what's going to happen to that sawyer, which you thought was the sawyer ha'chai. Mashiach came, Nebuch, that poor sawyer that got chosen to be for Shechita. So he looks to us like he's the sawyer shemeis. No, you got it all wrong. That sawyer is going to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That sawyer is going to be mechaper for Klal Yisrael. That sawyer, what? Well, if I was a goat, that would be my greatest goal in life, to be the sawyer l'Hashem. Otherwise, what am I going to do? I'm going to sit around Moshav all day and Beit Meir and Baal all day and keep up everybody from sleeping. So that's my goal in life. How I can become the sawyer l'Hashem? Unbelievable. So comes the Torah and paints for us this picture, so to speak, of life and death. It paints for us these two different approaches. Those who choose the path of the sawyer la'azazel, the sawyer la'azazel may appear to be a life, but it's ultimately, Chazal say, that Rishoyim, afilu b'chayim k'ru meisim, it's true misa. Masha'enkein, the path of the sawyer la'Hashem, the path of the one who goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that becomes ultimately the ultimate level of chiyus. This notion of when you come to the Beis HaMikdash and you're looking at the Karbonos and you face death, and right literally in the face, and you turn around, walk away from death, and you say, no, I'm alive, I'm going to stay alive. I'm choosing life. This is true for Yom Kippur, and it's especially true in Yom Kippur, but the truth is it's really accurate the entire year. Every time a person comes to the Beis HaMikdash, so really what he's doing, the very essence of bringing a korban, is a reaffirmation of life. The Ramban, in the beginning of Sefer VaYikra, comments as to what, in a sense, the remez yesh of akrabas hakorbanos. Putting aside Yom Kippur for a moment, generally speaking, a person comes and brings a korban. What's the mindset of a person who brings a korban? So comes the Ramban and says, a person brings a korban with the following understanding. There's midas adin. Midas adin dictates, ha-nefesh ha-chotas hitamus. Person violates the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's all finished. There is no second chance. I just had to punish one of my kids before. So, nothing serious. No terrible violation. So I was really getting ready to punish them. And as I was getting ready, and they said, no, Abba, I'm sorry. You melt. You just the heart melts at this time of the year, hopefully. So I said, okay. I said, this is the last time, but the next time. Of course, they know in the back of their mind, yeah, that's what you said last time. Okay, but that's really apparent, disciplinarian issue. But that notion that Midas HaDin dictates that the kid should really get it. But Midas HaRachim takes over. So Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Midas HaDin dictates, Chalila v'Chalila, person violates the Dvar Hashem. He violated one incident, that was it. It's over. There's nothing to discuss. Most tamos. Kumta parash of karbanas and says, Kadosh Baruch gives us an unbelievable second opportunity. What's the opportunity? Some of us may have done kaparas this morning. So you say, Zeh chalifasi, zeh kaparas, zeh purasi. Comes the Ramban and says, that's what a korban is. It's that feeling of watching, look what's happening to this korban. That really should have been me on the Mizbech. It should have been me. I really don't deserve to live anymore. Kadosh Baruch Hu b'chasdei Agadol gave me a second chance. That's what the bringing of a korban is all about. It's the notion of that Kadosh Baruch Hu is taking me out of the parasha of death, back into the parasha of life. That's what many of the Mefarshim explain. Just, you know, again, derech haremes, the ultimate reasons for mitzvahs we don't understand. Derech haremes, why is it so critical that the kohen is the person who has nothing to do with death? You walk into a kohen, into the base of Mikdash, so the kohen who's performing the korban for you, he's the person who's lenefesh le'itama b'yamav. He's a symbol of life. He's not a symbol of death. You know that Ahavdu ben Atam el Atar in the ancient religions, so what did the priests do all day? They took care of the mason. That was it. That was the entire job. In ancient Egypt, that's the whole religion revolved around. They spent the whole life taking care of the dead. So comes the Torah Kedosh and says, no, that fakir, when a person comes to the Beis HaMikdash, that's the last thing we want him to think about. The last thing he should be thinking about is Misa, fakir. He's thinking about Chaim because the Kedosh Baruch Hu is giving him a second chance. So if that's true, that notion of a second chance at life, that notion of rather than choosing the path of death, but being given the opportunity for life, if that's true for every day of the Beis HaMikdash, that it's true on the day of Yom Kippurim, where the ultimate korban chatos is brought, where the par and the soyer, the dam is brought into the Kodesh HaKadosh, but it's the highest possible level of a korban chatos. So the message is clear as day to all of Klal Yisrael, from the Kohen Gadol down to the Michatev Yitzchak Shov Mechad, everybody, it's the same message that Hanefesh HaKadosh Yitamos, Midas HaDin dictates there shouldn't have been a Yom Kippur in the first place. Kodesh Baruch Hu B'chas Da Gadol is giving you the opportunity to once again leave behind the world of Chet, leave behind the world of Azazel, leave behind the world of Misa and Tumah and everything that goes with it, and choose Atamad Veikim Hashem Lekeichem, and Kodesh Baruch Hu is giving you a second chance at life. If this notion of leaving behind death and choosing life is ultimately what Yom Kippur is all about, is the second chance, that rejuvenation, that possibility, so perhaps we can begin to understand what Lifnei Hashem T'Taru means. That Lifnei Hashem T'Taru means that a person has to become Tahor. What does it mean to become Tahor? Leave behind Misa. Leave behind Chet. Leave behind anything that is associated with Misa. Leave behind all the Chet, which is synonymous with Midas Adin, which is synonymous with Misa. Leave that all behind. Lift Hashem Tataru. Rather, be mitar yourself. Connect yourself to Vatam Advekim Hashem Akem Chem Chem Ayom. That's the ultimate message of Yom Kippurim, is the antithesis of Misa and the choosing of Vacharta Bechayim. But the question is, just what exactly is required of us? What type of v'chayt v'chayim is necessary? What type of lifnei Hashem t'toru is necessary? How does a person practically go about with lifnei Hashem t'toru? So here, once again, we have to go back to the model of tefillah b'mikvah. The Torah Kedosha chose the word t'toru as the word to symbolize the avodas hayom of Yom Kippur. If everything revolves around t'toru, so then it's the halachas of tahara that are going to govern what constitutes a v'chayt v'chayim of Yom Kippur. There are several halachas of Tahara that are critical for us to be aware of, not only in terms of the pure world of halacha, but in terms of the world of Tahara of Yom Kippurim. We know that the halacha tells us that when a person is toiva b'mikvah, so there's one thing which is absolutely critical, chayk v'lo yavar, is that the entire body goes under the water with the mikvah. The halacha is not only the entire body, the entire hair, every last hair has to go under the water of the mikvah. This is probably the only thing that could really, really, really go wrong in tefillah b'mikvah. Most of Hilchas Chatzitzas, most of the dinim that the shalas that they call frantic from the mikvah, you know, 99.99% of them are shalas of the rabbanon. Very, very real. You have a shalas of the deraisa. You know, the din is, in order to be a chatzitza deraisa, it has to be on most of your body, it has to be machped on it. So I said, unless the woman just went mudsliding and she wants to go to the mikvah without a shower, you're probably not going to have a shalas of a chatzitza deraisa. So, but okay, you have to keep the din of chatzitza deraban also. But minat Torah, very little can go wrong. But you know what can go wrong minat Torah? What can go wrong minat Torah is if you don't submerge your entire body. If you don't immerse your entire body, if you don't immerse every hair, so then the tefillah is no good minat Torah. So the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Kriyashma, he's not even your day in Hilchos Tevil, it's not even Hilchos Nida. He's talking about the middle of Hilchos Kriyashma. He's talking about the dinim of Seir B'Yishe Erva vis-a-vis Kriyashma. And all of a sudden, Mishnah Berurah, you can see it pains him. The Chavetz Chaim, he says, I have to talk about something that doesn't really belong here. He said, but I got to talk about it. He says, he said, you have to tell the women to make sure that when they go to tefillah b'mikvah, that the women who are watching them are so careful that every hair. He's not. This is not Hukas Tevilah. It's not Hukas Chatzitz. It's Hukas Kriyashma. But nobody says Chavetz Chaim. I gotta say it. He's gotta say it. Make sure that every hair goes under the water, because a chalil of a chalil, one hair doesn't go under the water. It's an isakares. It's mamish kamad lo tovel. It's a din min haTorah. So that's the worst thing that could happen at a tefillah b'mikvah. That's why we require what we call a mikvah lady. That's why you have to have a woman watching somebody go to the mikvah. Because otherwise, how do you ever know what it is? I can't feel that my hair went under. Some people don't have any hair, okay? But for people who have hair, so you're not going to know unless somebody's watching you. So what do we see from here? We see that in order for tevila to be effective, one thing it has to be complete. There's no games, there's no kuntzim. You can't have, I'm partially in the mikvah, partially out of the mikvah. Man, I'm half in, I'm half out. It doesn't work. In order for a tefillah to be mitar, a person, it's got to be 100%. For 1 second, it's got to be in the water for one split second. That's the definition, the basic definition of tefillah. There's a joke about the difference between the chassid and the misnagid who comes to the Ari's mikvah. So, you know, there's some people have a minig in the Ari's mikvah. They like to go to the mikvah the same amount of times the Ari used to go. The Ari at 7:39, all kind of different things up in Kabbalah about how to go. My minig is when I go to the Ari's mikvah spot, I go one time because it's freezing. I said, Mamash, I can't bear it more than once. So I go there one quickly and shut. But there are some people who go, they'll go 7 times, 39 times. So by the chassidim, they go down the first time, they come up, say vidu, they come down the second time, they say tilim, come back the third time, there's alchayt, everything, nacham, mamash, azak, kabbalas, and kavanas, and the shem yichads, and the michram zimans, in between it. The misnagid comes into the Ari's mikvah, he goes down, sticks his finger above, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, every time he goes out, he did, I was yaitzim in a mikvah, that's it. So each time, halachic new tevila. So whether you like the chassidish version of tevila v'mikvah, like the misnagdish version, but everyone agrees to the same story, that it's got to be all under. If it's not all under, then there's a big problem. But it's not even enough to be all under, because in theory, a person could be totally under the water and still have a problem. And that's what we said before, Hilchos Chatzitza. So it's true, min ha-Torah, it's not really a Chatzitza, unless it's a Ruba ha-Machbid. But the bottom line is, v'd-Rabbanan, that's din, halach l'maisa, when they call from the mikvah, and they say, the woman went to the mikvah, she's got a bandage on, she's got stitches on, she's got forgot a contact lens, she got a... So it's true that 99.99% of those shalas are only v'd-Rabbanan, but afal b'chein, v'd-Rabbanan, the tefillah is no good. It's mamash, it doesn't work. So the same is true when a person tries to be toivel, lifnei Hashem titaru. A person comes to be chayzer b'tshuva. What's he bringing to the table with his chazar b'tshuva? So I'm throwing myself into it. Yeah, true, I'm throwing myself into it. But there's a chatzitza there. There's something stopped. There's something that you're bringing into the tshuva process that doesn't belong, and it's chaytzeitz lifnei hatara. But perhaps the worst kind of, not even chatzitza, even worse than chatzitza, is what the Rambam writes, Befei Shnuchas Tshuva. The Rambam gives the mashal. This is the other mashal of my mashal. This is the Rambam's mashal. The Rambam says that a person who's chozer b'tshuva in the following sense means, oh, Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, I feel terrible for everything that I did. I'm mizbayesh and I'm menachem and everything. And then it's klapin, achet, 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 achet. Then he gets to the next part. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, give me the koach shel echta od. I shouldn't chayti anymore. That's the Kabbalah la'asid. So the guy starts to negotiate. Shel echta oid? I didn't say that. I just said I feel better about what I did. I didn't say I'm not going to do it anymore. So the Rambam gives the mashal. The Rambam Yerucha Shuvah writes, mashal ma'da v'doyme l'toivel v'sharetz b'yadah. That's the person who's toiveling the mikvah. At the same time that he's toiveling the mikvah, he's holding on to the sharetz. He's holding on to the dead animals, holding on to the dead mouse, as he's going into the mikvah. So says the Rambam, the person who's being chayze b'tshuva, as he's doing the quote-unquote tshuva, he's got plans for what's happening around the quote. As he's, imagine, he's standing there, Imam, she's standing, as those words come out, he turns around to his friend and says, did you hear the chazan's off key? He said, that's a chazan. He said, who's in charge of the air conditioning of the shul? The gabbai messed up, the rabbi messed up, we're missing the break. He said, as the words are coming out, so says the rabbi, that's mamish, toivah v'sharetz b'yadah. That's it, you got it, toivah v'sharetz b'yadah. I've told over before, I've heard in my shul, I've told the story of the halachic shayla. In all my years, I only got one time a toivah v'sharetz b'yadah shayla. So it was a real shayla. The answer was, it was a real shayla. A woman called me frantic from the mikvah. There was a frog in the mikvah. So she wanted to know, is that a type of a sheretz b'yadah? So I told her the good news was that it's not for a variety of reasons. First of all, a frog is not a sheretz. I said, number two, if the sheretz is in the mikvah, you're not holding on to it. That's the pasuk chumash, achmayin amayin. And the third, the best part of the news was that the sheretz wasn't dead. The frog wasn't dead. It was alive. So I was very happy about that. She would have probably preferred the other way. But whatever it was, all's well that ends well. So, but type of sheretz is a real din. Tevilah sheretz b'yadah means when you go into the mikvah holding on to the sheretz, the tevilah is ineffective. When you go into tshuva and you're holding on to the shrotzim, you're holding on to the ramasim, holding on to the chaz, holding on to the treifus, and you're trying to be chayz b'tshuva at the same time, it just doesn't work. It's ineffective and the whole tara becomes null and void. So we have a few messages about what Tara is supposed to look like. Tara is supposed to be a process of reconnecting with life. It's a choosing that I don't want to go the route of the soil azazel. I don't want to be that fake chai. I don't want to be the person who's quote-unquote alive. I want to be someone who's really alive. I want real chias. I want to take advantage of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me another chance at life. I want to take advantage of that Midas Adin isn't invoking the punishment of Nefesh HaChatasi Tamos. I want all that. That's what I'm choosing on Yom Kippur. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's wonderful. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Lifnei Hashem Tataru. But you have to do it with these messages. It has to be something that you're all in it, and there's no Dover Chaitzetz, and you're not holding on to the Chait at the same time you're trying to be Chaitz B'tshuva. This idea that that Misa, in a sense, stares us in the face on Yom Kippur, and there's no mixing words about that. When people tell me that, they're a little bit nervous about Yom Kippur, I said, that's good, that's exactly what's supposed to happen. Like, there's a story about the Ger Rebbe. There was a cipher who came to the Ger Rebbe and said to him that, I can't be a cipher anymore. He said, why not? He's been a cipher for 20 years. He says, you know, I'm so nervous every time I'm writing a tefillin. I'm always nervous if I make a mistake, so then the tefillin will be puzzled. So the Ger Rebbe said to him, he said, so who should be the cipher? The person who's not nervous? He said, of course it should. So a person that says, I'm going to Yom Kippur, I'm not nervous, I'm cool, calm, and collective, going to Yom Kippur. There's something clear. Again, we're not advocating become neurotic. We're not advocating, you know, sometimes a person has, there are certain real issues. A person is becoming overboard. Okay, that's a different parasha. It's a different finatzvot. You have to address that in the proper sense. But for a person to say that I'm going to Yom Kippur and there's nothing concerning me, so that's something lost in the equation. So a person is clearly looking Nisa. It's hard to go through the davening on Yom Kippur without thinking about death at least once or twice during the course of the davening. And I think it goes without saying that the time in a davening, those who may daven different nuschos, may not be able to identify with this particular part of the drasha, but I think that the tefillah that really catches us most, catches us in terms of facing death, is clearly Nesana Toikiv. I think hands down, you get more tears per Nesana Toikiv than you get for any other tefillah during the course of the day. You have to always be careful. You know, I know some places they don't say Nesana Toikiv when you're in Kippur. I know that. I was there. I was there. But you have to always be careful when you give a drasha relating to something about tefillah. So you have to always be careful that you know what the nuschat tefillah is beforehand. So my first year in Paramus, so one of the surprises was that in Ne'ilah, they only say Yigma Midas maybe once or twice, very, very few times. Like most, you know, everyone else, the other Nuschos, say it every 2 minutes, and then every 1 minute, every 30, every 10 seconds, you're saying another Yigma Midas. So I had a whole drush already about the why is it that we have this minig in Ne'ilah that we repeat and repeat and chazer over the Yigma Midas, and you go, as you get closer and closer to the end, the Yigma Midas get closer and closer together. Then I'm fiddling through the mouth and said, this is not going to fly over here. You got to give the right drush in the right place. So, the mice said, it's not a Tokyo drush, I think I can give you. They said, it's not a Tokyo here. Yom Kippur, they said, good, so I can give the drush. So, you know, you think about Nesana Toikiv, which is really, obviously, both in Rosh Hashanah and, of course, in Yom Kippur, conjures up very real fear. Rightfully so, that's exactly what it's doing in the davening. Person says words that are very, very frightening. You speak about Adam Yisrael Demiyofa, Yisrael Feliyofa. It's hard to give a nice spin to that. It's pretty, it could potentially be very, very depressing. Adam Yisrael Demiyofa, Yisrael Feliyofa. The question is, what happens at the end of that tefillah? So one would think, imagine as follows. Imagine if somebody would walk into a shul, they've never been in shul before in Yom Kippur, they don't know anything, they don't understand the Hebrew, nothing. And they'd walk in on a Nesana Toikiv. They'd walk into Davening on a Nesana Toikiv, and they would hear people crying. And someone would hand them, you know, an article machzer, and they start, look, yeah, I understand why people are crying. I said, people are crying because they're talking about miyichia, miyamos, and mikitzvi. It's a very, potentially very, very scary thing. So I would understand perfectly, 100%. Imagine another person walks into davening a minute later. He walks into Ein Kitzva L'Shnoisecha. Right? He walks in and he sees the place is bumpity-bumpity again. Kitzva L'Shnoisecha. Say L'man Shmecha V'Kadesh Shimcha Baktisha. And everyone's screaming out, Kevaydai. Ha 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 ha. And he'd say, wow, they're having a celebration here. They're having a party. This is unbelievable. It's a New Year's party. They're bouncing and dancing as the band's playing. And the other guy says to him, he said, you won't understand how crazy these people are. He said, 5 minutes ago, they were all crying, standing over a grave, saying, Miche Miyamos, and 5 minutes later, they're having a parade. It doesn't, Mamish, doesn't make any sense. What's going on? Did we ever stop to ask ourselves? The contrast of those two tefillahs is, Mamish, it's scary. I told over my shul earlier in the year, that in around the winter time, I had to get some more work done on one of my cars. So I gave him the car for a couple of days into the mechanic, and I went to pick it up, and the mechanic says to me, he says, I'm so excited, we came to go with the car, I really had to meet you, I wanted to talk to you. I said, okay. It was you know, one of these body shop guys, and I said, really? He said, you must be a very fascinating personality. I said, okay, I mean, I like to think of myself as that, but I'm not sure what I left in the car that made him believe that. So he said, you know, I was working for a few hours in your car, and I was listening to your music. So I said, you listen to the most interesting music. That's what he said. I said, okay. I took my car back, and I figured, you know, let me press the button and see what was in there last. The last CD that was in there was Yeshivas Keren B'Yavne Yomim Noroim Davening. That's what this person, who was very clearly not Jewish, was listening to. So that's without understanding the words, he thought I was off the wall. Kal v'chomer if he would have understood the words. So, but listen to it ourselves. Unasan toikev, and then Bavo Kvot Shimcha, Kana Shimcha, what's Pshat? So I think the Pshat is everything that we've been saying. The Pshat is that we stand by Unasan toikev. So we look at Chaim and Mavis, and we ask ourselves, you know, it's a very depressing thought. But there's only one thing that's redeeming, because we have the ability to overcome Isa. We can become, in a sense, immune from death. How? Not necessarily physical death. How can we become immune from death? The more we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more we leave that world of death. In the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no such thing as Misa. It's the Yom Shekulo Tov and the Yom Shekulo Aruch, when you're lifnei Hashem. So then Misa doesn't exist. It's a non-entity. Misa begins when you're thrown away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When once Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, so they were thrown out of Gan Eden, they had to leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. When you leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, that's synonymous with B'yom HaKolch V'men Mos Tomos. When you're lifnei Hashem, death doesn't exist. So all of a sudden, we come to this unbelievable realization in Yom Kippur that we just said Mi'ichem Mi'yamos, and we're scared and we're shaking, and then we say, wait a second. We're Atam Adveikim Hashem Lekechem. We connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're the Am of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're immune from this whole parasha. We are Atam Adveikim Hashem Lekechem. And in fact, what tefillah do we immediately begin on the heels of Nesan HaTokev? The tefillah of Kedusha. The word Kedusha and the word Tuma are opposites from one another. Whenever there's a halach of Kedusha, you can't have Tuma. Kedusha is based on Mikdash, you can't have Tuma in the base of Mikdash. When you're eating Kodshim, you can't have Tuma. Whenever there's a Mokom Kodesh, whenever you speak about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we refer to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam as a Kodesh Baruch Hu, when you're speaking about Kodesh On, you're speaking about Kedusha of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Tuma doesn't exist. You know why Tuma doesn't exist? Because Misa doesn't exist. A Kodesh Baruch Hu is Kulo Chayim. In the world of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, there's no such thing as Misa. Misa is something, when a Kodesh Baruch Hu is devoid, when a Kodesh Baruch Hu is out of the picture, then Misa sets in. So the transformation from Nesan HaTokev to Kedusha is the Yesodis of Yom Kippur. That's what it's all about. Is that we declare that Uvachar Tevachayim, that we are choosing the Emes of life. That's the Yesod of Yom Kippur. When it says Lifnei Hashem Tataru, what it really means is literally to choose life. To choose Tara, which is synonymous with choosing life, and the method, the mechanism of choosing life means to choose HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we do on Yom Kippur. It's the ultimate affirmation, ultimate statement of what real true life is all about. I remember years ago when I was living in Keren B'Yavne, and I came back. I'd gone back for another time, the Kayitz Man and then Elul Zman, and I came back afterwards on Matzah Yom Kippur. I came back for Sukkot, back to America, and after having just spent 40 days in Keren B'Yavne and in Mamish, literally Elul Yehla, I didn't have to listen to the CDs. I got the real McCoy. I just finished Rosh Hashanah, and it says Vetshuva Yom Kippur Mamish, Vedis Hashem. And a plane landed in JFK, and it wasn't just me and the plane. A lot of yeshiva bachurim had come back for sukkahs from the various yeshivas. It was a real high, you know. This was the Motzei Yom Kippur flight, so yeah, everyone was really, you know, really, really, you know, excited. Really, we hadn't even had a chance to ruin it with the Shvach HaShachos yet. You know, we had, you know, as the old joke goes, you know, what do you say to Rachum on Motzei Yom Kippur? It's ready for the Ma'ariv. So right, so the Rachum carries over for Ma'ariv Motzei Yom Kippur. We didn't have a chance even to blow it in Shachos yet. So we were still mamish on the high from Yom Kippur. Like, and you see it as yeshiva bachurim coming off the plane and getting all excited. You have the guys walking over there with their esrogim, you know, ready for that real, that post Yom Kippur pre-Sukkot look. And there was a fellow, one of the security guards in JFK, you know, also clearly not a Jewish fellow, and he takes a look at us and he sees we're a little, you know, a little up in the air. So he says, "Fellas, welcome back to life. Welcome back to the real world." That's what he says. I think to myself, Hashem Yirachem, JFK Airport is life. That's the real world. I said, I just was in the Rabbeinu Shalom, I lift Hashem to Taru. I just spent 40 days and 40 nights in Chodesh Elul, practically on Har Sinai. And you're telling me, welcome back to life. I said, you got a very, very different definition of life. The guy may have been a nice fellow, but that's the life of the soul. That's a life of nothing. That's a life of that's a life that mimics life. That's Rishon Bechayim Nikroim Mesim. It doesn't mean anything. V'chayte V'chayim, the aside of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the follow-up to Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah was the Lifnei Hashem of Tfila. Yom Kippur is the Lifnei Hashem of Tara. A person affirms that he wants a life of Tara, he wants a life of Kedusha. Basically, he chooses to be with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The more and the closer that a person comes close to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the more he's ultimately dovek in the true source of life. So Yom Kippur is a day very, very much of life. It's a day that has a lot of contrast, a lot of strange things about it. Even the clothes that we wear highlight this contrast. We stand in Tachrichim, and yet we're looking like Malachi Asharis. Because we look at to what one person's Tachrichim is another person's Levush Abadim. That means we're Mamish, we're Malachi Asharis, because we're able to overcome the Tachrichim, we're able to overcome the Misa, we're able to overcome the world of Tumba, to enter into the realm of Atam Advekim Hashem Lekechem. Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us the Koichas of the Koichas Aguf and Koichas Aneshama in order to fulfill, in the fullest sense of the word, these words which really permeate our entire Yom Kippur experience of Lifnei Hashem.